Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Feldenstein, and I am dedicated to explore the life that is lived with clarity, confidence, control, and awareness. And today, we are very lucky to have a really wonderful guest, Nancy Byrne, who we have talked to before, but today you're going to get much, much more of this story because this is a story that needs to be told. And so I'm very grateful, and I really want to thank you, Nancy. Welcome to Tippy Talk, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me back, Tippy.
I know that we can probably talk for 20 hours and still not get everything we want to talk about, but I'm hoping that we'll get a lot more of your story today that I think everybody wants to hear. Everybody that starts hearing your story, I know that you have a book called Choices, which is actually a great read that I recommend for everybody to take a look at that book, and you learn more about Nancy and where she's coming from. But there's nothing like you telling the story by yourself. Nothing can even compare to that. So you went through a lot of things in your life, and then you got to a point where you decided to write a book. What happened? What made that switch from going through this to writing it down, to putting it on paper?
Well, actually, Spirit told me that I needed to write a book because my life's experiences would help a lot of people. So many people, women in particular, feel that, they're the only ones going through it, and they're embarrassed to share their experiences with other people because people will humiliate them or, after I wrote the book, a man wrote a really negative review for me. He said that I was not a very good person for writing the stuff I did about my dad. It set a very bad example, for kids who might read the book and think negatively about their parents, or I don't know. It's just people they think they're all alone. They're the only ones that have been through these experiences, and they're not alone. So many people just don't talk about it because they're ashamed. So I've up to that point, I've always been very secretive about my past because of the same reasons, but I have learned, finally, I think I'm learning to follow whatever Spirit tells me to do, and I think it has gotten, has helped a lot of people to realize that everything we go through, it's like, you know, you can't graduate from college until you go to kindergarten, you know, to preschool, to kindergarten. You've got to go through elementary school and middle school and high school, and that's basically, you know, what our life's experiences, they teach us to grow, and we learn, and we grow from every experience. We learn how strong we really are, how resilient we are, how, oh my gosh, what amazing, tremendous human beings we really are, and that we can conquer anything. I truly believe that. And my life's experiences, I have made me who I am today, and I wouldn't, well, first of all, I would have never had a book to write if I hadn't gone through these life experiences. And it gives me a lot of compassion and understanding for, you know, for other people. I've done a lot of counseling and with people, and, you know, some people just think you just need to get over it and get on with your life. And, you know, I think unless you've been through so much of this stuff, it's just really hard to empathize with somebody else. You don't, and then it's given me a tremendous desire to want to help people and empower people because, gosh, I don't ever, ever want to see anybody suffer or go through pain or agony or disappointment. It just, I can't stand it. I'd rather do it myself. But I know, too, that everyone has to go through their own experiences on their own sometimes.
Okay,
because
so, yeah,
that's
let's
what builds
go back.
You up.
Let's go back 1 minute because you were talking about a lot of pain, and nobody really knows what pain you're talking about. I know because I've spoken to you before and we've talked about your book. So there's something really big that you touched on. You touched on a review where a man told you that your story doesn't set an example for kids, which was, I guess, kind of a negative review, but not really. Like you said, it depends on how you take it. What do you think about that? And I'll tell you how I see it, but what do you think of the fact that he said that he doesn't set a good example for kids? How would you respond to that?
I think that all I can say is that Spirit wrote the book, so it has to be a good, it's got to be an empowering book. And everyone has the right to their own opinion, and if that's truly the way he felt, then he gets to feel that way. I know that I didn't write the book with any malice in my heart, and
mm-hmm.
I really want it to just be an empowering book. And that's my my life purpose, is to help people, and to, you know, so everything I do, I feel like if I'm walking, trying to walk with God, then that's what is going to happen.
Yeah. So. Definitely, it's a very powerful lesson because, first of all, there's no way that everybody is going to love what you do, no matter what you do. I mean, look what they did to Jesus. Obviously,
yeah.
Not everybody's going to love what you do. And so it doesn't really put you in bad company that somebody thinks that. But on the other hand, what he said is such a huge thing because one of the things that kids seem to be indoctrinated into thinking is that no matter what your parents do, they're your parents, and so you shouldn't go against them, even if they destroy your life, and that you should still take the abuse and not say anything because they're your parents. But I'm sorry, they have no right to be your parents. They don't even have a right to be anybody's parents if they abuse their children. If they abused somebody, like if they did things like that to other people, they would be in jail. And as far as I'm concerned, they should be in jail for abusing children. And so, obviously, your parents abused you. What did your parents do that was abusive that there was not, that you talk about, that they're not comfortable listening to?
Well, just the things I wrote about in the book, about, you know, how my dad beat me and just was very abusive. physically and emotionally. And I guess that some, and it was a man that wrote the review, didn't think it was, you know, you're just supposed to not talk about that kind of stuff. And so many people feel that way.
I know. So I definitely think that people should read your book. The name of your book is Choices. And it's a really good book, and you write your story and the things that happen to you. But for somebody that has not read your book and wants to get an idea of what you're talking about, that you got beat up, it wasn't just walk in, beat you up, and go to your room. It was a lot more abusive than that. So give us one example, and we're definitely going to give them the link so that they can actually read the story, because it's a very touching story. And it is something that people need to read about. Obviously, it's a message that needs to be out there. You were guided to give that gift to the world. And so what kind of things, give us one example of one incident of what would happen. And was it just your father? Was it both your parents? That how you grew up? One example of something you wrote in the book.
One example was when my dad just beat my mom and me, and I have a brother and a sister. But I was sitting at the kitchen table, and mom.
Wait a minute! He didn't beat your brother and sister ever?
No.
It's just you and your mom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so,
yeah,
I want you to know that that's very typical also, because an abusive parent, and I didn't know that. I thought if somebody was going to beat one child, they were going to beat all children. But somehow, abusive parent pattern, even if they have 8 kids, they pick one kid, and that's the kid that usually gets it. And it's usually the parents, too. But sometimes, even if it isn't going to be the mother, it is going to be one child that's going to get beat up the worst. So, yeah. So go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. I was sitting at the kitchen table, and Mom was washing dishes, hand washing the dishes, and my father was upset about something. He just kept walking back and forth, just yelling at her and yelling at her, and every time he'd pass by her, he'd just, like, punch her or hit her. And she just kept washing the dishes like she wasn't even aware that he was doing this to her. And I was just sitting there just watching this whole thing, and we had finished eating, and so she was washing the dishes, and finally he stopped pacing back and forth and hitting her, and he just put his hands around her neck and was choking her, and she was turning blue, and I thought, oh my God, he's going to kill her, you know. And then, you know, I looked at on the table was this little steak knife, and I thought, I can't kill my own dad. And then I just got up and I just shoved the knife up his rear, and he let go of her. She fell on the floor.
Did you cut him?
Yeah, I did. I cut him.
Okay.
And she fell on the floor. She looked like a rag doll. I didn't know if she was dead or alive. She just fell in this heap. And then he turned around. Oh my gosh! And I realized what I had done. I mean, spittle was coming out of his mouth as he screamed at me, and he told me he was going to kill me, and I believed him. And we were really, really, we didn't have much food to eat because he spent most of the money on booze and on other women. So I was just little, and he had worked at the Pueblo Army Depot in Colorado, and he wore steel-tipped boots protect himself at work, and so he literally drop kicked me across the room. And when I hit the wall, I thought, you know, I must have disassociated or something. I saw my head rolling along the ground, and he was walking at me, screaming at me, and my mom got up off the floor, and she didn't even look at me. She just walked into the bedroom and closed the door. And the next thing I remember, it was morning and I was still on the floor. I just kind of crawled into our little bedroom to get out of the way so I wouldn't be there when he woke up in the morning. But just things like that. He was just, I think he had so much anger, or maybe he was just, you know, disappointed the way his life turned out, and he turned his anger towards somebody else. I think he was very frustrated.
Maybe he was just a psycho.
Well, there are a lot of options. I guess I would like to tell myself that he just was very sad, you know.
No, he was definitely sad. But he was definitely not happy. That's for
yeah.
sure. I mean, happy.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
And he just, it was just, you know, my first memories of even being alive were when I was just a little kid, and I couldn't have been more than two. Anyway, we'd gone to the Arkansas Valley Fair in Rocky Ford, and I was still in a stroller, and gosh, it was so exciting. I just like just all the people, because we never went anywhere. Dad was always at the bars, and we lived, we had a little farm, and so just to see all the people and the lights and the rides, and people were eating, you know, stuff, and it just people were happy. It was just really neat experience. And then somebody came up to Dad, one of his friends or something, and said something about what a cute little girl, and I look just like my daddy, and you know, he should give me a ride. I bet that would be really happy. And I think that the individual meant like the kids' ride, but Dad put me in one of those rides that, you know, now you have to be so tall, and it twirled around and around and around, and then it also the platform rose up off the ground and it turned around too. And I was terrified. I was screaming, screeching, and they had to stop the ride, and that really embarrassed my dad because lots of his friends were there, and we left immediately and went home, and when we got home, he had my mom strip me down to my little panties, and he proceeded to beat me to a bloody pulp, and there's blood all over the floor. My mom was sitting in this little straight back chair, and Mom was on her hands and knees wiping the blood off, and he kept walking back and forth and just screaming at me and just telling me how much he hated me. And so I think it started out with me, you know, I mean, it started out with me from probably the day I arrived, that he just couldn't stand me. So...
No, I don't think it had anything to do with you. It wasn't that he couldn't stand you. I think he couldn't stand himself. And usually an innocent child is what reminds you how horrible you are. So it's such a psychotic behavior that you can't even begin to explain it. And you shouldn't, because it doesn't say really anything about you at all. Are your parents still alive?
My dad died about 7 years ago. And my mom is still alive. And
do you have any relationship with her?
Yeah. You know, in retrospect, when I look back at that incident, I really think that if Mom would have intervened, Dad would have been, he was crazed when he was upset or when he'd been drinking. I think he would have killed both of us. And I really think that actually, you know, it was for the best that she didn't, because once he was going to do something, no one better get in his way. So, and she's read the book, and she really likes it. She's proud that I wrote a book, and you know, she's told me several times that she's so sorry that she wasn't there for me and she didn't do the things that she should have done. And, you know, I just told her that I think she made the right decisions, because I really think he would have killed both of us. So,
yeah, you forgive her.
But
your
pardon?
Do you forgive your mother?
Oh, of course. Yeah, we all do things that, you know, sometimes we regret or we don't regret, but whatever. None of us is perfect. So, you know, there's that verse about when you live in a glass house, don't cast stones, don't throw stones. And I think that that's true. It's not like I am a perfect individual. So,
go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. No, was I ever?
Were you ever able to forgive your father and have any kind of semblance of a relationship with him?
You know, I always wanted Dad to love me, and I really tried, you know, to, even after I left home and got married, I would go visit them and I'd, you know, take Christmas presents and stuff like that. But they never really seemed to, you know, to really want any kind of a relationship with me. I'm the only one of my siblings that had children, and so I thought they'd be so pleased to have grandchildren, and they just ignored them, you know, except for one time. And I really, and you know, I don't know if I'm making this up in my mind, but I felt like my kids were threatened. He wanted to take my my son, who was just a year and a half out, to die to Holbrook Lake, and that's where he tried to drown me. And he looked me right in the eye and asked and told Jeff, "Come on, get in the car, and I'll take you to the lake, and we'll go fishing." And I said, "No, you're not going to the lake with your grandpa." Let him take my kid. I just felt like he was very vindictive kind
very.
Of man. So, yeah. And after that, I realized that, you know, I couldn't, I just really kind of quit going to visit them because I didn't want to put my children into that same situation. I mean, just to go visit them and let them know that I wanted to be around them or wanted to be friends, you know, I wasn't going to jeopardize my kids just for that. So I quit seeing them. But then after my mom got a divorce, and which really surprised everybody because she'd lived with him for almost 50 years, and she just said that he told her that if she was home when he got home, he was going to kill her. And for some reason, she believed him. That time, he always used to tell her that, but that time she just believed him, and she went to a neighbor's and ended up in getting a divorce and you know, living in a kind of subsidized housing place. And then when she was getting the divorce, they wanted, you know, nobody was there for her because my sister and brother, I guess, didn't want to upset Dad, or and I was scared that he might try to hurt her. So I went back to take her to court, and when I was talking to the, I don't think she was a victim's advocate, but she was trying to tell Mom what was going to happen, and I told her everything, and she asked me to write it, put it all down in writing and everything. And so, you know, they read about what my dad had done and everything. And then Mom had injured her leg. A bridge had broken when she and Dad were going across it, and she had injured her leg, and so she had this little chair, a kind of a recliner chair that she could lift her leg up, and it was still at the house. And so I called the police to please give us an escort to, you know, to be safe, because I wanted to get the chair. And Mom and I went, and the police were there, and they sent every police officer in Rocky Ford. They were really scared of Dad. They knew what kind of a person he was. And they were knocking on the door, and you could see Dad. He was pretending like he just didn't know. Oh, hi. You know, I didn't know you were there. And so when I was trying to pull, they were arguing, and I was trying to pull the chair out on my own, and there was a doily on it. And he said, "You can't take that doily. That's not yours. That's not her. She doesn't get that." And so I gave him the doily back, and he said, "You're a sick person, Nancy." He goes, "You're a sick person for the things you've been saying about me." And I said, "Who's sicker, Dad? Me for saying them or you for doing them?" And he lunged at me with his fist shut, and the chief of police stood right in between us. And so, I mean, that's the last I ever saw him.
Wow. It's really touching, because I think everybody has either been through some kind of abusive aspect or has experienced it. But hearing it, and knowing that they're not the only ones, that you also, I think that's one of the reasons that it's so important for you to tell the stories, because there are so many people out there that are suffering in silence. And that's really scary when you think nobody else will want to know, nobody knows, nobody cares, nobody will ever help you. That I think is even scarier than anything else.
Well, and I think it's important for kids to know that, you know, it's it's not, you didn't do anything to deserve it as a kid. You're just a little kid, and sometimes things just happen, which doesn't make you feel any better. But so many times I just felt like I didn't know what was wrong with me. I mean, why my own family didn't love me, and I always prayed to be lovable, and I prayed to be beautiful, and I thought if I was beautiful like my sister, they would love me. And, you know, you just, you don't understand, and it just, it's kind of a lonely place, except that I did have my father's mom and my mom's dad. It was really neat because I was their favorite, and they were always just, they always gave me a lot of special attention whenever I got to see them. And so that helped so much, you know. So even, you know, for adults that, you know, see some little kid that's mistreated, I mean, if there's anything, obviously, if you, they're being abused, I think you need to report it. But if you just sometimes show someone a little bit of kindness, it goes such a long way, a tremendously long way.
Right. It's not even a big thing to do, just a little bit of kindness is really all you need. And so was your sister or brother abused in any way at all?
Well, my brother and my dad used to call names, you know. But my sister was just, and she still is, darn her. She's just gorgeous. She's got emerald green eyes, and she's got like a 21-inch waist, she can be making fun of you, and you'll be laughing. I mean, she just has this great personality. So she was always telling jokes, and the family was always talking about how beautiful she was. And I don't ever remember, you know, them even saying anything derogatory about her at all. She just was so cute.
But she
everybody.
Was not, yeah, so she was never abused. She was never abused.
No, the only thing is one time we were at Dias Lake, and it had this big dike. You know, it's kind of, and then it came out, and people would sit there and fish. But it sloped, there was like concrete that sloped clear down into the water. And Linda, we used to call her Toesy because she sucked her toes as a little girl. And anyhow, she was sitting on the dike with Dad fishing, and she had on a little baseball cap, and she talked and talked all the time, and so he had stuck a cigarette in her mouth to keep her quiet. And she was sitting there on the dike, and he sent her to go get some worms or something. He said, "Toesy, go get me the can of worms." And so she was going to get the worms, and she slipped. The dike was all covered with like algae. It was real slippery, this long green stuff, and she slipped, and she fell into the water, and none of us knew how to swim except Dad. And I looked at Dad. She was screaming and screaming, and Dad was just sitting there looking at her and going, "Oh, Toesy, you can get up. You can do it." And I remember it surprised me because he really liked her so much, and he didn't do anything to help her to get out. And then I looked at Mom, and Mom was just standing there in the street just frozen. I think she just didn't know what to do. She just was frozen. And then I looked down, and Toesy, her little mouth was covered, and then pretty soon, and she was just looking at me, and she was terrified. And so I went down the dike. There was little pieces of, like, rebar or something. I was trying to hold on to a little piece, and I stuck my foot out to her, and she grabbed it. We went back up, and even when we got back on the road, she wouldn't let go of my foot. She was so scared. But that surprised me that neither of them did anything to help her when she was drowning, when she had fallen into the lake. So I don't know. Maybe they just didn't. They didn't have a lot of good coping skills, let's just say.
Yeah. Yeah, just because someone is a parent, it doesn't mean they're not a person and that they still have to deal with all the stuff that they have to deal with. And really, it should be illegal for some people to be parents, but, you know, we can't control that either, so absolutely. Yeah, so that's pretty amazing. What's amazing, really, is that you came out normal, you know, because with that kind of abuse and with that kind of attitude, it's very hard for children to be functional even, when I say normal, I mean functional, because it's hard to function when you have all those records playing in your head. I wasn't pretty enough. My sister was prettier than me. I wasn't good enough. What was wrong with me? Obviously, a child doesn't know, so they ask those questions. Whether they're relevant or not is not important, but you wonder, what's wrong with me? Why does Daddy not love me? You know, so that's really difficult. So you're very lucky that you weren't permanently damaged.
Yeah, it's been, you know, it's been, oh, Tippi, I tell you, I just am so happy that I'm finally listening to Spirit, because that's, I think, truly, I know that's what saved me, because I always thought that, you know, that I just convinced myself that I didn't need anybody, and, you know, I could do it. I was a rock, you know, and so I kind of, I think, cut myself off from people. I mean, I like to be around people, and I was always a friendly person, but I didn't really have a lot of friends, and it was I haven't had a lot of self-confidence, and I always am, you know, I've been really fear-based about everything I do in my life. I'm always afraid, you know, the boogeyman's going to come out of the bed and take me away or something. And it hasn't been easy. I have to say that, you know, I can't tell people it's been easy, but all I can tell you is that it's worth it. It's worth it, and you deserve it to, you know, to try to make the best out of you, the best you can out of your life, and to live a happy life, and to do it for you, to know that you deserve to be happy, and that, you know, you have a purpose. We all have a purpose, and it would be a shame, you know, to just spend the rest of your life thinking about the past, dwelling in the past, you know, thinking about how horrible it was, because then you're just letting it affect you now in the present. You can't, don't look back, because you're not going that way. You're moving forward. And it's just amazing when, you know, when you finally realize that, oh, my God, I'm a human being. I can breathe the same air. I have the right to breathe the same air everybody else breathes.
Wow.
And that you're not, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to be you and live the best life you can, and everything else will follow. Everything else will follow.
Wow.
And I think that's really, you know, I think that's really the important thing, is to know that you do deserve to be here. Somebody, you know, God, Spirit, the divine, the sacred, whatever you choose to call, you know, the spirit that lives in all of us, thinks you're special, or you wouldn't have a soul. You wouldn't have that spirit within you. And that's the most important thing. I mean, so somebody, some other human being didn't like you or didn't think you were worthy of much attention, but Almighty God thinks you're worthy, and that's all that matters. That's all that matters.
That's said very beautifully, very, very beautifully, because as a child, how could you even think you matter at all if all you get for love is no loving gestures, no loving anything? So you definitely have to grow up thinking something is wrong with you. Did you grow up thinking something was wrong with you?
No, well, I don't think I thought something was wrong with me. I know I always wanted to be pretty. I just, you know, I was always very intelligent, and, you know, my grandparents always used to talk about how smart I was, and I would pray and say, but I don't want to be smart. I just want to be pretty.
Okay, because you associated being pretty with your parents being nice to you. Because you thought, well,
yeah,
my sister is pretty, and that's why they're nice to her, so I must not be pretty. You probably were very pretty anyway.
Well, when I look back, several years after, and was looking at a yearbook that my principal had bought for me, I was a cute girl, but I never thought of myself as being, you know, I was always the ugly duckling, the black sheep. Nobody would ever want to, you know, my dad told me nobody would ever love me or want to be with me, and just and so
did
I,
you,
you know, you
him?
Believe what your parents tell you.
Right.
But
did
I,
believe him.
Yeah, and I had an experience though when I was about 10, I guess it was, and I went. We lived across the street from the Catholic Church, and for some reason, I was just really, I had been crying in school and just really nervous and everything. Dad had gone drinking, and so I snuck out of the house and I went over to the church. They never locked, you know, it was Rocky Ford. they didn't lock the church. And all the lights were out except for there were just, two penance candles. We belonged to the Catholic Church. And I walked up to the front pew, and I knelt down, and I was praying, and I was just begging God to please let me die. Please, just please let me die. And I was trying to, you know, reason with God and, you know, explain why. I was telling him that, you know, there's some people that really want to live, and they die. And so I really wanted to die, and why was he making me live? Why couldn't he let somebody that wants to live live and let me die? Because I wanted to die, and I was just, please, God, please, I'm begging you, just please let me die. And I felt a hand on my shoulder, and I thought, oh, good grief, it's the priest. He's going to take me home, and now I'm going to get beat up again for sneaking out of the house. And I turned around, and there was nobody there, Tippi. And
wow.
So I turned around back towards the altar, and it was all lit up in this beautiful, like, golden light. It was just, it was like just such a, it wasn't like real, real bright. It was almost like this mellow, it was just gorgeous. And at that moment, I felt so ashamed. I mean, even as a kid, it was just like, I realized that, you know, life is a gift. It's the most precious gift we're given. And here I was just telling God I didn't want to take it back. I wasn't grateful for it.
Wow.
And I felt ashamed. And I ran out of the church and I ran home. And I remember thinking that even God wouldn't follow me to our house because Dad was there, you know. But it was like something at that, I feel like that moment was kind of a turning point for my life, because it's not like the beating stopped or anything like that, but it wasn't, I was happy to be alive, you know?
Wow, yeah, that's a profound experience.
Yeah, and you still have, there's always hope as long as you're still trying and you don't give up, there's hope. And I got straight A's in school. I had read every single book in the little library. And because
right.
I felt like that was my one key to escape, to get out of there. And I knew that it's going to have to be me that got me out of there because,
right.
you know, they at that point, there was nothing. There wasn't like social services didn't do anything. And I wrote about this in the book too, but because I got really good grades. This girl had come to the house. She had been sick, and I always got A's, and so she wanted to borrow my paper. I didn't even think about, you know, anything. I just let her borrow my paper, and when she left, Dad was just furious. He was screaming at me, you know, what in the hell is she doing here? She's the biggest whore in town, blah, blah, blah. Why is she coming to see you? And in the book I wrote, you know, frankly, I think he was jealous that she came to see me instead of him. But my mouth has always had a life of its own, and, you know, instead of some sort of, you know, life-affirming response, I just said, well, Dad, if anybody knows who all the whores in town are, it would certainly be you. That was a wrong thing to say. But, and at that point, it was just, I guess, I was going to get beat up no matter what anyway, and so I just figured I'm not going
to do with what you said.
I just figured what you did or what you said. I'm not cowering anymore, you know. And so he punched me right in the face and he said, "Get the hell out!" Oh my God, I was so happy. I you know, he told me to leave. I thought I had permission. I ran out the back door, and I didn't even have shoes on. I was a freshman in high school.
Okay.
And and then he went and got in the car. We had those great big trash cans. They were like ceramic. You could burn in them, you know, or like made of cement or something, and you could burn in them. I jumped into the trash, you know, out back. And he got in the car, and he was, like, looking for me. And then when he went down the alley the other way, I ran down the alley, and I ran to my principal's house, but he wasn't there. And then I ran to my guidance counselor's house and told her what had happened, and I was so happy that he was letting me leave, you know. And she goes, Nancy's going to turn you in as a runaway. And I said, no, Mrs. Carmen, he gave me permission to leave. He said, get out. Honest, I would lie. He told me to leave. And she said, no, he's going to turn you in. And she goes, we've got to go to the police station. So we went. And then my principal, she must have gotten a hold of my principal because he was there too. And we walked in, and they were telling the chief of police about what a sweet little girl I was. And I was always coming to school with black eyes and, you know, bruised, swollen lips and bruises and, you know, cuts and everything. And, you know, and then he told this young officer, he said, go bring Fred in. And he said he'll be at one of the two bars, you know, because everybody knew about Dad. So sure enough, Dad came in, and it was, Tippy, I didn't even recognize my own dad. I mean, he was laughing and talking, and he was so jovial. He just seemed like such a nice, happy person.
Nice guy. Mm-hmm.
And he sat down, and he was like, you know, telling him that, you know, no, he never hurt me, you know. He thought maybe I was on drugs. He didn't know what was going on with me. You know, I was always depressed and always crying, and, you know, and da 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 da. And they were telling him, you know, and he said, we were there for a while, and then the chief told the young officer to take Dad and me home in his police car. And I started crying. I stood up and I said, no, please, please don't make me go home with him. He hates me. He wants to kill me. And I don't like him either. I hate him too. Please don't make me go home with him. Can't you put me in reform school or something? And they said, no, I have to go home with him. And I thought, oh, my God. I remembered praying to die. And I thought, well, now my wish is going to come true, you know. I was wondering how Dad is going to do it. And I was in the back seat. And see, this again, I really believe it was spirit. The young officer, he looked too young to be driving. He looked at my dad, and he said, you know, Mr. Mascarenhas, he goes, we can't go to your house and check on your daughter. He goes, but we can go to school and check on her. We can go to church and check on her. We can check on her when she's walking home from school, he said. And he said, you know, and so you better hope that she doesn't accidentally fall or injure herself in any way. And my dad was just, no, you know, we're just, she's just a liar. I think she's on drugs. She's crazy. She likes to hurt herself and just tell people that I do it. She's just, you know, she's just a bad kid. And the officer yelled at him. And he said, she is a sweet little girl that gets straight A's at school, and everybody loves her. And he said, you are nothing but an effing drunk. And he said, you just better hope nothing happens to her, because if it does, your whoring and your drinking days will be over, because we're going to put you in jail, and we're going to throw away the key. And the beating stopped.
Finally.
The next morning when I woke up, I could hear Mom and Dad in the kitchen, and Dad was telling Mom. And this is weird, because it's the first time I actually heard Dad say that he wanted to kill me and he couldn't stand me. And this almost hurt more than anything. But He was saying, you know, that young officer was right. He goes, I just hate her. I can't stand to look at her, and I just would love to kill her, but it's not worth it, you know, to spend the rest of my life in jail. And he never,
wow,
ever beat me again. And so I think that,
wow,
you know, I really think that officer saved my life.
He probably did. Probably did.
Yeah.
Because your life was worth saving. Definitely. Wow, how touching. And you survived all that. And you survived to tell the tale, which is,
yes,
pretty amazing. Because I have to tell you, you don't know how many people I talk to that have not survived. And my own brother, my mother got married to a guy when she had 5 kids. My brother. And he was the one that used to get beat up every day. Every day. And he died when he was 31, but by the time he was, I think, 16 or 17, his brain had been damaged so badly from being thrown down the stairs, thrown up against the wall, and all that, that we knew there was something wrong, and he never had a chance. And he was like a brilliant, he was a genius. He was gorgeous, he was a genius, he was smart, he was feisty, he was very feisty too. But when people get beat up every day, it's very rare that they can survive it and be sane, much less healthy. Very, very. Well, the only thing I regret is not taking him to court and not reporting him, because my mother was so afraid for us to report it. And I don't even know if anybody would have done anything about it, if I would have reported it, but she made me not report it. She said that his kids, he also had 3 kids of his own, would suffer. And I loved those kids, and I didn't want them to suffer, but I didn't realize that he was going to kill my brother.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the really important things, and important messages, is for you to let people know that no matter what anybody says and no matter what anybody does, talk about it, report it, tell people, tell a million people until somebody believes you. Because being quiet is not going to help anybody. It's not going to help you. It's not going to help anyone. And
no,
I think
it's
I'm,
not.
Yeah, and I'm very proud of you for coming forth and talking about it. I know it's difficult, and I know it must be really hard to even go back and think about it. So I know you're doing it in spite of the fact that it might be difficult to do it. And that's really amazing gift that you're giving the world.
Oh, thank you, Tiffy. I really appreciate that.
I really said I'm going to write about it. Did something happen?
I'm sorry, what?
Did something happen to make you want to write the book, the story?
No, I didn't want to write the book. I honestly and truly, I didn't want, like I said, I've always been so secretive in everything. And even, I'm married again. I divorced my other husband. And you know, Phil's parents always wanted to know about my family, and they didn't know anything about me. And I was like, I'm not ever telling anybody. You know, I just don't want anybody to know about that, because I just thought, you know, his family wouldn't want him to, you know, would think, my God, you know, you got, you know, a reject wife or something. I just didn't want. And also, I don't, as a kid, it was, you know, people would always look at me with pity in their eyes, and I never want to be pitied. I don't want anybody putting that energy out towards me, because, you know, I feel like right now I have a charmed life. I love who I am. I love my life. I have a good husband. I have my Doberman and 4 cats. You know, Spirit moved me to Whidbey Island. I just, oh my God, it was all worth it, Tippy. And I think the Spirit was really with me the whole way. I think that before you're born, your soul knows what lessons you need to learn, and you kind of pick your life accordingly. I'm not trying to get anybody off the hook, but that's just, I, so, and maybe I just tell myself that so that I can think that I had choices even as a kid, but I know that everything I have gone through has made me who I am today, and I'm honestly, truthfully, I could say that I am grateful for every experience, not that I would ever want to relive it or wish it on anybody else at all, but I did go through it, and I'm actually grateful because I am one strong woman. I amaze myself sometimes.
Yeah. It does make you very strong. You know what they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah. But I'm strong enough now.
You don't need any more. That's it. I'm strong enough. Leave me alone. Yeah, totally. That's an amazing story, and that's an amazing survival story. And I think that's really a powerful thing because not only did you go through it, and I cannot even begin to imagine. I don't think anybody that has not been physically abused as a child can understand what it's like to be physically abused as a child. And I think you can't take a person that has never been emotionally abused as a child and for them to understand what it's like to be emotionally abused as a child. So it's you can kind of think that you understand it, but until you live with it, until you walk those shoes, you don't. But I think what we could understand from that is the importance of reaching out and letting the world know and trying to get into the families and trying to make those children, because right now there are a lot of children that are being abused every single day. It has not stopped with your father. So
that's
somehow
true.
Yeah. And so somehow getting through to them, letting them know that they should speak up, and also that there is life after your parents. Because as a child, you don't see that. You see life as, this is life, and that's it, and I want to die because I can't take my life. But you don't realize there's so much more to life than your father and your mother, which is a big part of your life, but not everything at all.
Yeah, that's really true. And I think it's important to know, too, that, you know, people always talking about, you know, well, God's testing me and another test and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Spirit told me that He doesn't test us. You know, He's Almighty God. He already knows what decisions we're going to make and what's going to happen. And He wouldn't give you something that you're going to fail at and just lose all your confidence and berate yourself for. What we're being given, even though sometimes it's hard to understand this, it's difficult for me, but we're actually being given a tremendous opportunity for growth and personal empowerment. Because when you're afraid to do something, terrified to do something, and you do it anyway, or when you think that some obstacle or something is insurmountable and you go ahead and you accomplish whatever it was, your confidence just soars. And that gives you the confidence and the ability to take another step, to keep moving forward, and you trust yourself and you trust Spirit so much more, you know, when you succeed at something instead of when you just resign yourself and just lay down and die. I mean, there's so many people that are kind of like, you know, the movie zombies. I mean, they're just like part of the living dead. They don't really live their lives. They don't enjoy it. They don't take time to smell a flower, to go out and it's just their whole life is just all being negative and about doom and gloom. And if you just start living that, it's like a habit. The more you do something, the more you do it, the more you keep doing it, and pretty soon you don't even realize that you're not living your life, that you're not enjoying it, that you are alive, and you need to enjoy every moment of this precious life you've been given. It's not always easy. It's, you know, you're going to have bad days, and I have bad days every day with the computer. It's just, you just have to keep moving forward and be grateful. in one day there's got to be something you can be grateful for, that you saw this beautiful bird, or that it sang you a melodious song just for you, or that your pet comes and puts her head on your lap. There's something that makes life worth living. And when you focus on those things, you start having more and more and more good things happen to you. So,
yeah, that is such a beautiful way to end the show, because it's on a positive note. And yes, I totally, absolutely, you're right about it. Life is a gift.
It is.
No question.
It's the most precious gift we could ever get.
Yeah, and so with gratitude and joyful heart, you love your life right now, which I'm sure at some times you couldn't imagine having it that way, and you get to enjoy it, and you get to live life on your terms. And
yeah,
that's basically the end of everybody's story. When you go through a storm, when you go through something difficult, this is exactly what can happen to you when you make the right choices, which I love that name, the choices you make. Not the choices you make or what happens to you, but the choices you make after things happen to you. How you take it, how you think about it, how you relate to it.
Yeah. And when you realize that you have the most powerful force on the earth on your side, you can do anything.
Exactly. And you will do anything you want to do, especially when you already know that you can pretty much take it. No matter what comes your way, you can handle it, and you can come out on top, and you can thrive, and you can enjoy life, and you can appreciate it really, really well. And that's a beautiful story, and I definitely recommend everyone to run out and get the book Choices. Do you want to give us the website on where they can get it?
Yes, it is. If you go to www.choices-nlb, it's my initials.com, again, www.choices-nlb.com. You can order it from my website, or you can get it at Amazon, Balboa Press, or Barnes & Noble. And it really, like I said, it really has just gems of wisdom for everyone in that book. It's a great read. I can say that because Spirit wrote the book.
Yes, and when you go to that website, you will open it and see a beautiful picture where it says, learning to walk, talk with, and hear Spirit will change the course of your life. And this is what Nancy is all about. It's about changing the course of your life into a more positive and more beautiful path where you walk with Spirit every step of the way. That's the message that I'm taking away from everything that you've said. It's about walking with Spirit, and everybody can walk with Spirit. There's not one person that is not good enough or not smart enough or not pretty enough, because Spirit is there waiting for every soul to join. And so, thank you so much, Nancy. It's been amazing listening to you. I could listen to you for hours, and I really appreciate you taking the time and passing forward the beautiful message that you have.
Thank you, Tippi, for having me back. I really enjoyed it.
We have come to the end of our time together here on Tippi Talk. It's been wonderful chatting with you, Nancy Byrne, and thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Tippi Talk with me, Tippi Feldenstein. We bid you a magical journey, and let your talent be your potion. And everybody run over right now and get book Choices. That's where you'll get all the details and so much more information. And don't get lost.
Will you find me, angel of love? Skies are crying, everyone knows.
Angel of my life. Yes, we are calling all angels to join us here today as we discuss the difficulties. We have discussed, the difficulties that some people have to go through. We all go through difficulties. Some are more than others. But at the end of that journey, at the end of that road, there's a beautiful sunrise waiting for us where spirit walks right beside us if we decide to open our eyes and join that. You can join us here on Tippy Talk every Monday at 5 p.m. for more insight and information to help you grow and prosper in a more powerful way. You can do it. You can survive it no matter where you are and no matter what you're doing. I'm here to tell you spirit is waiting for you to come and join that walk with the angels by one side and spirit right there by your side. Once again, we're going to bid you a magical journey, and we're going to ask you to let your talent be your potion so that you can grow and prosper and live an amazingly happy and fulfilling life.